Hi. Well, thank you for coming. This is the 3:30, just a little workshop about the history of the Atlanta Roundup, basically as it's been seen through the eyes of committee members. So if you believe that these facts are not true, then you're wrong. my thought on this was, I'm going to tell you, take a couple minutes to talk a little bit about, you know, how I came about being here at this moment in time, and it's been quite a journey, unorthodox journey. My first roundup was 1978, because in 77 it was a Southeastern, and my mom got sober in 76, and I was 8, so I came here at 10 as an Alateen with my two brothers and my parents, Al-Anon and AA. So that was my first roundup. It was at the Radisson. It was over off of 285 at the Radisson. At the time, it was a young hotel. It was a very nice place. And I can remember, you know, why it was so awesome as a, you know, 10-year-old was that we didn't have parameters. Like, the only thing that kept us in check was a very slow security guard. And so we ran the halls for for 3 days, and it became a vacation. I don't know at the time, and some of the people up here might be able to, I'm going to let them introduce themselves after I give this little excerpt, but they might be able to explain better on how my parents were able to stay at the hotel. But I remember staying at the hotel. We swam in the pools, and thank you, James. We swam in the pools, and we just ran rampant all over there. We didn't even know what was going on behind the closed doors, but we just knew we were having a blast. So that was my perception as an Alateen at 10 years old. Now, I wasn't technically an Alateen. I was labeled one. Okay, I went to the meetings, but I hated them, so I didn't really stick in that sort. My brother, middle brother, David, was like super Alateen. Alateen speaker all over the Southeast, became famous in his own world. And my older brother, no chance. But he was like the godfather of the kids, you know. Whatever he said, we did. And then when he wasn't looking, we did whatever we wanted. But that was my first experience of the roundup. And then fast forward to 1992. My mom was the chairperson in 1992 of the Atlanta Roundup. And she always paid our admission. My brothers, three of us, one was sober. At the time, my middle brother was sober. I was still out having a good time, and my oldest brother was having a good time. Well, in 1992, my oldest brother, who I had been going out with that year, we were just having a blast, without telling me, came to the roundup, got sober on Saturday night, and got the big book. I didn't know, okay? I had no idea what was going on at the roundup because I was drunk down in Buckhead for 4 days. And so I came to on Sunday morning, knew my mom had paid me and invited me to the roundup. I said, I'm not going. I passed, at this time it moved to Castlegate, we'll get into that. Castlegate, I had to pass 75, pass the Castlegate, go to their house up Marietta. It was 6 a.m., 7 o'clock. 8 o'clock rolled around, I go, you know what, I'm going to go down there, see some people. I just need a break. So I come in, everybody's congratulating me as I walk through the door, saying, good job, we're so proud of you. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I don't even know what's going on. It turns out that my brother had gotten the big book. They all thought I was him. So they thought I had gotten sober the night before. I'm still drunk. And I sat, if the castle gate was like this, there's some chairs over here. So I sat in the front row and heard Don Pritz, who's no longer with us, tell his story. And no connection between the two, prisons, institutions, me. Hard drinker in Buckhead, you know, just kind of a totally different world. But he talked about how bad his heart hurt. And that night, I got in touch with Harold, and the next day I went to a meeting. So got sober at the Atlanta Roundup 22 years ago. And then fast forward, my good friend over here, Bill, called me 4 years ago and said, hey, put you up for the committee for the Atlanta Roundup. I was like, oh, great. Okay. So I got a call about 10 minutes later. We like to, behind the scenes, what we do is we like to get pre-approval, and then we get approval, because we don't want to be shut down. That would be hurtful to our self-esteem. So we go ahead and have somebody call somebody to make sure they'll do it, and then we'll make the official call so we don't have to get told no. And that's what happened. I got called by Bill M., and I went to my first meeting, and then 4 years later I became the chairperson, and here I stand in complete awe of the experience I've had behind the scenes on what it takes to put this event on. And what a great weekend we've had. Summarize real quick. I was almost late down here because I was listening to Benoist talk, and I couldn't leave my seat. It was so incredible. Last night, Masoon was just so funny, and then her story at the end was incredible. It shed some light on my current situation. And then to open us up was Dick, and if you missed him, if you ever hear him around Atlanta, you got to listen. He's so funny and really told a good story. So without further ado, that's kind of why I stand here today. And I put this together, and the beauty of being the chairperson is this. I can't ask everybody to come up here. And as it turns out, I asked, just so you know, so everybody's not looking at me like I picked favorites. It just ended up this way. I asked Glenn, asked to be here. He couldn't be here. He was trying to make he couldn't be here. And I asked Carol J., who was one of the first committee members, to be here, and she couldn't make it as well. It just turns out that what I have is the guy who 12-stepped me, a guy I got arrested at his house staying there at 17, and then the guy who's had me laughing since the first day I met him, Bill, who got me here. So my whole life is in full circle up here, and that's what the Atlanta Roundup has done. So I'm going to turn it over to Harold, who's going to take us through the early years, and then we're going to just let it flow from there. If you have questions, we'll get to some questions at the end if you're just curious about times and dates. So Harold, all yours.
Yeah, let me clarify one thing about Eric coming into the program. He called me. I had preceded Lindsay as chairperson of the Roundup, and he called me, and I had no idea that he had a problem with drinking. So I thought he was calling me to talk about baseball, and he wanted to talk about this over the phone. And when I realized that he was talking about wanting to get help with his problem with alcoholism, we changed around the 12-step call. This is the only 12-step call I've ever made where the alcoholic came to me. I told him to come to my house, and I 12-stepped him in my living room. So that's how the journey started. I talked to Glenn. Glenn Strickland was one of the original committee members, and we'll get into my part on the committee a little bit later on, but Glenn gave me some background on the formulation of the Atlanta Roundup. It was actually Conway Hunter's vision. And Conway was the, for those of you who don't know, Conway started Peachford Hospital. So Conway wanted to have a reunion for all the graduates of Peachford Hospital and celebrate recovery. And he engaged some members of the AA community who told Conway that wasn't a good idea. So at that point, Conway got Grady Tiller and George Montgomery, who had conference experience, to form a committee. They brought Joe Phelan on the committee because of Joe's connections within AA and also Joe's organizing ability. They brought on Joe Hubbard. Most people think because of his connection with Conway, but it really wasn't. It was more for his, again, connection within AA. And Glenn was actually brought on because he was Conway's watchdog on the committee. Conway and Glenn was a relative newcomer. He was the youngest guy on the committee, both in sobriety and in age. He had less than 4 years at the time, so he was Conway's watchdog on the committee. The interesting part about that, though, is because of the relationship between Glenn and Joe that grew on that committee, eventually, when Joe became trustee in New York of Alcoholics Anonymous, Glenn became a member of the self-support committee when we went through the challenge of the self-support in the late 80s up in New York and then throughout the country. So as a result of the Atlanta Roundup, one of our members was actually on the committee up in New York. Originally, like I said, the Peachford was going to sponsor this as a reunion. Then when they decided they weren't going to do that, the Dunwoody group was going to sponsor it, and they decided that it wasn't right for one group to do that either. So the five members on the committee agreed to put up some seed money to start the Roundup. And then Conway guaranteed that they'd have 100 registrants from Peachford. So that's where the original money, the original seed money came from for starting the Roundup. Just a few fun facts. Marge Montgomery was the secretary from the Roundup from the time that it started until, John will get into that later on. But she was the secretary, but she was never actually a voting member of the committee. Only alcoholics were voting members of the committee. The other thing was that Corliss Gibbons was the first actual female member of the Atlanta Roundup Committee, and John Holmes was the first voice of the Atlanta Roundup, and then he went on to become a committee member. So those are the parts that I got from Glenn, and I'm going to turn it over to John to go into the Holmes era.
Well, I don't know if I could be as concise as my predecessor here. But I do remember this, when Harold, in his illustrious fashion, mentioned the point about trying to convince, the group trying to convince Conway Hunter that they should keep this as an AA function and not as a Peachford Hospital. The power behind that actually came from Joe Phelan. As many of you, some of you know Joe Phelan, who happened to be my sponsor, just told Dr. Hunter, "You can't do that." And that was the end of that. But I also want you to know something else as far as my contribution, I call it. At the first and second, then we had a skipped year because of the Southeast, the conflict with the Southeastern. I think that my sponsor had a lot to do with me becoming the voice of the Roundup. And I also want you to know that the people who were mentioned were all on that committee, and they were all considerably older than I was. In years, but not necessarily in sobriety. And I was kind of undertoned in that committee as the troublemaker. And I don't know why a gentle guy like me would be considered to be a troublemaker, but I was.
Still are.
Yeah. And it was really a very interesting time. The first roundup was held at the, what was it, the Radisson?
Radisson.
Yeah. And it was quite a successful roundup. And there's two points that I want to make that I think, these are my personal, so it has nothing to do with the roundup. My personal point was that I felt that we really became unified as an area as far as Alcoholics Anonymous was concerned. I mean, people came from all over the place to come to this first roundup. And Joe Phelan was very instrumental in setting up people who would take a meeting out to various parts of Atlanta and the suburbs, and the whole idea was to promote the idea, ask the meeting if they would give us permission to promote the idea of the Atlanta Roundup, in which they were courteous enough to do that. And I think it had a lot to do with it. So in the first years, before the Roundup would take place, months in advance, you would see the emissaries coming out to spread the word about the Atlanta Roundup and where it was going to take place. And we had a lot of fun. And then we entered into another era of my life. In 1978, it was probably I think it was February of that year. I came to the committee and made an announcement in the committee that I was going to go through a divorce. and it was going to be a little bit sticky. That's a gentle way of saying it. And that I thought that it would be best if I resigned from the committee. If there was ever any notes that went back, I don't know if it was included in the notes or not. But anyhow, I made the announcement to the committee. And the committee was unanimous that they did not want me to resign. He said, no, there's no need for that. This has nothing to do with the Atlanta Roundup. Well, I thought that was just fine. I was really happy to see that my fellows and our first lady, as a matter of fact, it was a different lady. Our first lady was a different lady. And I'm trying to remember her name, and I cannot. She was sober a long, long time. She was the first delegate.
Neely Daniels
was on the committee.
Talk to Glenn.
Well, Glenn may remember that.
No, he's the one who told me Corliss was.
Well, you know, he's getting as old as I am, so he might be wrong. But
he might be wrong.
Anyhow,
we'll go with Neely. By
anyhow,
unanimous
and he might be right, too. It might be me. So anyhow, we went ahead and had the roundup in 1978. This is inside information. People in the audience were never aware of this stuff, but this is inside information. Because many times, you know, what we do is we attend these things, and it just looks like it's perfect. You know, the timing is great, and it comes off wonderful, and the speakers are great, and geez, it's just wonderful. You knew some of the meetings that took place behind the curtains. I mean, you'd be astounded they'd ever get this thing done. So anyhow, what happened, we went ahead and had the roundup, and it was great. And what happened was you always have a meeting after the roundup that we kind of take and see where we are and how successful we thought it was and if we could do anything else to improve it. Anyhow, we were at the Radisson. I think it was. Bill Roop was on the committee. And one of my dear friends on the committee stood up and said, "We've come to the conclusion, John, you should no longer be on this committee." And went on to tell me what a terrible person I was. And I, you know, I'm just sitting there. I didn't know. And anyhow, when he got through, I told the committee that I would be happy to resign. But first, I was going to ask each and every one of the members of the committee to stand up and tell me that they did not look at me and tell me that they did not want me on this committee. And nobody stood up, including the person who made that announcement. So I left. And if I told you that I was slightly angry, would be the greatest understatement that I could ever tell you. And I felt like somebody had hit me with a 2x4. And I was trying to make some decisions about what I was going to do, and I went to see my sponsor about it. And I sat in Joe Phelan's kitchen of his home. And I can't tell you about some of the language I used in the kitchen. But he said, "You're not going any place." And anyhow, the outcome of this was a 4-day jury trial. Got that? This is divorce now. 4-day jury trial in the Lawrenceville courthouse. And The way I remember the date so well is, you remember Larry Flint?
Yeah,
he
got shot.
Right, he got shot right outside the courthouse.
Yep.
On the day of my divorce. And I took my sponsor's advice. And what I did is I stayed here and went to the same meetings. I know that I was not popular to some people. But that's understanding. You know, we alcoholics in recovery, you know, we're not perfect people. And I stayed in AA and I tried to become the best member that I could in this program. Bought a house in Lawrenceville and lived there by myself. And I, this was my feeling at that time, that if I had to live by myself the rest of my time in my life, that was okay. Because I was ready to change. I had a different kind of spiritual awakening in my life. And so I just became a working member, just another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason that I mention this is because that which I thought was a tragic thing that took place with me turned out to be the best thing that could ever have happened in my life. And I thought, whatever God has in mind for me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the best I can with it. And it was a couple of years later that I was in a meeting and I saw this little blonde lady, and I thought she was just the sweetest thing in the world. And all the women got around her and warned her about me. But for some reason or other, she didn't listen. And I think that was my second great miracle. We've been married 32 years, and it's really been superb. She's been very gentle with me. But I wanted to, that puts a little mystery into this thing, you know, we're talking about the roundup. Yeah, the roundup, right, the roundup is what we're talking about.
She still gets him off track.
But, a few years after all this happened, I went on my merry way and I resigned from the roundup and I was not a part of it any longer. And I'm trying to remember the year, and I'm not sure that I can remember the year. I got a call from his mother. And she called me, and she always referred to me as Holmesy. That was her. That was the way she responded to me. Miriam and I were married at this time.
It was the late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
No.
No?
The 90s, because I was already gone. It was 90. It would have been 93 or 94.
Mm-hmm. I think 92. That's right. 92, she said. Yeah.
Hey, it's Mickey. She knows.
Yeah, really. I ain't going to argue with Mickey.
But anyhow, what happened is she said, could you come and meet with us? And I said, certainly. I said, I'll be glad to. So I got reinstalled in the roundup committee, which I thought was really interesting. And I'd like to tell you that everybody was highly in favor of me coming back on the committee, but that would not be true. And so I agreed to come back on the committee to help wherever I could help. And I think it had a kind of like a couple of years that was kind of bouncy years as far as the roundup was concerned. And I was glad to do that because I've had very fond feelings about the Atlanta Roundup, and I thought it deserved better. And I got active on the committee and served my time as chairman, and then rode off into the sunset once again. But I thought that the Roundup was in good hands.
And can I make a comment about that real quick? Because I think it's something very important that I don't think you'll talk about. But I have to say this because we lost our hotel in Decatur and had to come over here, and a lot of that. I reread all the minutes. And Mickey's right. It was back in it was early 90s, 1992, right before I got sober. My parents put up some money. We didn't have any money. I mean, we just didn't. My mom was so adamant about this Roundup going off, she put up some of her own money. And it was, I believe, and John, I don't think John would even say this, but his only requirement was that my parents would get that money repaid before we moved forward.
George and March, too.
George and March. And then there was something called the reserve that was put in place at that point to not put anybody's personal finances on the line anymore. But that's how important this was in the history of the Roundup, was that this is the kind of stuff. Now, that year, the year I got sober, okay, the connection here is, if that Roundup would not have happened on that date, at that time, the chain of events would not have happened that I would have gotten sober. The chain of events would not have happened that I would have met my wife. The chain of events would happen that I didn't have my kids. So the Roundup in itself, if you connect the dots going backwards, that decision that was made in a way that makes the, you know, everything in my life kind of come full circle. So that was that meeting. And I only found out about that because John never told me that, but the minutes are all the way back to the 80s that we have them documented. And I found it when I was trying to figure out historically what happens when they lost a hotel. So when in this period of time, which Harold, did you have the insight of how it's changed from the Radisson to the Castlegate?
Yeah, I was chairman.
And what happened?
Well, really, actually, I wasn't. I was going in as chairman, and the minutes probably do not reflect what really happened because the minutes were taken by Marge, and George was actually responsible for the switch. What happened was we were not happy with the arrangement that we had over coffee. Coffee is always, I don't know if people understand it, but it shouldn't be very hard to find, it shouldn't be very hard to appreciate that coffee is always a major expense at any AA event. And George was very conscious of that. George understood it. George was the one who originally, if you've been around long enough, there was one year where coffee cups went from 8 ounces to 6 ounces at the Roundup. George had gone around and realized, you know, people are throwing half a cup of coffee in the garbage. So we're paying for this coffee to go in the garbage. So George was intensely aware of that. And he got into a rather haggled negotiation with the Radisson over coffee. And the other thing that had happened was, inadvertently, they had given one of our rooms away that we used for hospitality the year before. They had put another party in there. And so George felt like we had a bargaining chip. So what George did was he went to some other hotels just to show that we had leverage, and went back to the Radisson and got extremely ticked at them. They got extremely ticked at him, and it got heated, and they said, well, if you want to leave, leave. Well, at that point, we had no choice other than the Royal Coach. So I took over as chairman at that point and was handed the Royal Coach. I call those the challenging years. Because not only that, but about 3 months before my first Roundup as chairperson, our taper went out and got drunk. So he had been taping the Roundup, I assume, since the very beginning. He was an old member at Skyland, and I had to go find Charles Duggars and see if Charles could rearrange his schedule to come in and tape the Roundup. And you know, these tapers are gone, and I mean they're booked every weekend. And so Charles moved some things around and agreed to tape for us. And in the meantime, the other guy kept coming back to us. I'm not going to mention his name, but he kept begging me, and George kept telling me, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. So anyways, that's the story behind how we moved over to the other place.
And then how do we get over here? Bill, do you know the story on how we got from... We went back to the Radisson, and that was in... What years was that?
I don't remember the year.
86.
Thank you. But the reason we moved to here...
No.
It had to be 90s.
It had to be in the 90s because we were at the Royal Coach in 91 and 92.
We met in 85 at the Radisson on the steps.
That was before we moved.
Okay,
that was before we were still at the original place.
So follow the bouncing hotels. What we did was we went Radisson, Castlegate, Radisson, then to the Westin, then over to Decatur for the Decatur Roundup, and then we came all the way back to the Westin. So somewhere in those time periods, the Castlegate now, which is no longer there, we came back to the Radisson for a brief stint before they tore it down.
That's why we moved.
Yep.
Because they tore it down.
Okay.
Yeah.
We couldn't have it at the Denny's.
We met there once and it wasn't there.
Right. You held your meetings. It's become a Ramada.
We went to Denny's, you know.
Yeah, we went to Denny's.
But that's why it moved. That's
and then you became, you entered into the scene around that time?
Later than that. I started right away coming to the Roundup because it was so inviting and it was such a thing then. You know, that's what you did. I remember I couldn't imagine not going. And, you know, John talked about the unity of how the Roundup originally affected the unity of AA. But what I think is it affected the unity of AA and Al-Anon. Because I remember Eric and David and Jay running around, and Hank, who was my oldest son, and the hot dog lunch parties at the pool, and and I remember the first year I went to the Radisson, I went to the Roundup. I got to tell this story quick, but I wrote a check for my badge. And when I went to pick it up, Marge, I said, my name is Bill Freeze, and I'm here to pick up my badge. And she said, well, Bill, your check bounced. I said, well, that's okay. I'll write you another one. I was a little offended when she didn't take it, but and I'm going to tell the rest of that story later on. But well, I better tell it now.
Go ahead.
When I was put on the committee, I don't know, Bill Franz called me, the real Bill F., called me and said, would you like to be on the Roundup committee? And I could not believe what I was hearing, because I have wanted to do this forever. I remember going to the Roundup and seeing Glenn and Joe, John, Bill Roop, standing in the back, all with suits, looked like they were morticians. You know, really, beautiful men. Beautiful men. And you never knew what went on behind. That's right. Nobody knew, because out front it was beautiful. And I thought, man, oh, man, oh, man. And I went to the first Roundup I went to, I went to the pool and sat. And there was a guy named Wes A. and a guy named Bob Johnson. And Bob sponsored Wes. And they were talking to each other for like 4 hours, and I am sitting there watching them like a hawk, and I'm thinking, God, I wish I could talk to somebody, anybody, for 4 hours. I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say. And that was the beginning of a love affair, and it happened every year. I remember. And the thing I loved about the Roundup most, one of the things, is is it's made people approachable. You know, I could never figure out why Bill Roop would say hello to me and he knew my name. I could never figure out why Joe Phelan would say hello to me. Why? I still can't figure it out. But anyway, I've kind of lost my train of thought. But so when Bill Franz called me and asked me if I wanted to be there, I always said, you betcha. You betcha. And he called me back, like Eric said, and said, you're on the committee. And I went, and they said, I don't know why they asked me this, because I've never heard them ask anybody else. But they said, what would you like to do while you're on the committee? And I said, there are a couple of things. I would like to see the relationship between Al-Anon and AA rekindled, because it had gotten apart. And it wasn't what it used to be. There wasn't any hot dog lunches at the pool anymore. You know, there weren't kids running around. You know? And they said, okay, what else? And I said, I want to get Lindsey Gabe to be the voice. And I want to get Richard Gabe to be the Al-Anon speaker. And I want Katie Gabe to talk. And Dick Wright, who was another one of my sponsors, to talk. I got all but one. But your time's coming. But the Roundup, you know, here I am on the Roundup committee, the thing I never thought I'd ever, ever, ever get to do. And they said, how do you want to do this? How do you want to try to repair the relationship? I said, to thank them. I think we ought to, on the Saturday night meeting, I think we ought to get them up there and thank them. You know, what? How do you say thank you? You say thank you, you know? So, and I said, I think if we're going to do it, we got to do it quick, because George is dying. And they said, okay. I said, can we do George and Marge this year? Yeah. I said, now, I think the chairperson ought to do it. They said, no, it's your idea. You do it. I said, that was the best news I ever heard. So George was too sick to come. And so Marge came, and somebody had one of those smartphones. And while Marge was up at the podium on Saturday night with me, we called George on the phone. So he was on the phone with us. And I told Marge the story. I said, you remember? You don't remember, but I remember at my first Roundup, I bounced a check for my admission, and you wouldn't let me in until I paid cash. I said, Marge, as a result of a lot of things and a lot of people, I am now the treasurer of the Atlanta Roundup. And she screamed as loud as I've ever heard her scream. And George was laughing on the phone. You could hear him. And then, I don't know if you didn't know George, you don't know this, but there's one thing he always said. And he was laying in bed. He couldn't even hardly move. And I said, George, do you have anything to say to everybody? And I stuck the phone to the microphone. And he said, if nobody's told you they love you today, let me be the first. And so that was the first dream that I really wanted to do at the Atlanta Roundup. And everything else got done except
Katie.
Yeah. But that
I'm still chasing her too. So.
Yeah, I know. But there, you know, when I said it was accessible, I used to listen to a lot of tapes, and one of them was got by a guy named Chuck C. And so I saw John. I knew John well enough to come up and say hello. And he knew that I liked tapes. And he knew that I liked Chuck C. And he said, would you like to meet his wife? Chuck had already died. Would you like to meet his wife? And I go, you know, like that. And he goes up, and of course he knows her real well. And Elsa. And, oh, what a beautiful woman. And she was talking, giving the Al-Anon talk at the Atlanta Roundup. And here's John introducing me to her. And I thought, how does this work? The AA is the only place in the world you can do that. The big guns will talk to you. You know? So it's been a love story from the that minute. They let me be the voice twice. That was a mistake. I was the best mistake I've ever not made. But anyway, it's been fun. But part of the things that we started, that I wanted to start back then, have been done, because Al-Anon is much more involved and more, you know, and more prominent. And young people have taken over, and I think we're in good hands. I really do.
Thank you, Bill. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell a little bit about where we're at today, and then we're going to tell some stories about just some things that have happened. And if anybody has any questions, by all means, ask them about where we're at, the future, or what questions you may have about why do you think that way? And we'll tell you. I came on the committee 4 years ago. This is my last year. Like I said, Bill asked me, and then 10 minutes later I got a phone call, and I showed up at the first meeting, and actually Mickey was there, and I sat there, and it was really no introductions. You just kind of walked in and you sat down, and Mike was there too. But I always like to let people know what they're getting into when they get around me. So the question I asked was, and I didn't realize that there was someone asked to leave the year before, but we won't get into that. It's relevant to my question, though. My question was, how hard is it to get kicked off this thing? Because I've been asked to leave quite a few things in my life. And so that was the start of it. And then they made me entertainment chair the first year. I knew nothing about entertainment, really, except creating an improvisational amateur career at home by making my family laugh as much as possible. Entertainment, and they said, well, you're in charge of the dance, and then Friday night's entertainment. So I go, all right, well, does anybody have a DJ's number that I could call? Well, no, we really don't have that. So I was like, okay, well, I'll find one. So I got on the phone. I didn't have a budget, anything. So my first year, I paid too much for the DJ and got the wrong DJ. And then I brought in Claude, who's John's brother, who gave us a raving stand-up comedy routine that half the crowd was laughing and half the crowd was wanting to laugh because it was, let's just say it was risque. But anyway, everybody the next morning, what's interesting about me and how hard is it to get kicked off, the next morning everybody was talking about entertainment. So we got the entertainment from karaoke to, hey, what the heck happened last night? And so my relationship with the Roundup was born. I became the chairperson last year. I was voted in, and a lot like Bill, I was voted in going, okay, all right. A lot of us have jobs. A lot of us cleaned up after getting drunk all our lives, and we were at our job, and we're behind our desk, and we're going, man, I'm good until they find out who I really am. That's how I am as a chairperson. I'm good until they really know who I am. So as I ventured forward, I show up in my first meeting, and we lost our room at Triangle. So we had no room. Everybody's there, but we have no room. I didn't know I was supposed to hold a room or book a room. So we went to Starbucks. I go, what should we do? We'll just go to Starbucks, have our meeting. It was a lot like Bill saying, the hotel was no longer there, which is in jest. We didn't have a place at Triangle. So we had this meeting there. And then about 5-6 months later, we failed to secure the Decatur Conference Center, and we were without a hotel 5 months before our roundup was supposed to go off. Well, I have a job, right? So I'm working to make a living, and I get a text about, I don't know if Lynn's here, it was probably about 2 o'clock, and I was in a meeting, and I got a text from Lynn that said, we have no hotel. And so I excused myself from the meeting and then got back in touch with her. And sure enough, I called the hotel and there was no way I could get anything done. So that's how I got into this whole history thing. I went in, went home. Katie, was there, and I shared my experience with her. And then Bill M. gave me a box. I had no idea what was in the box, but it turned out it was all the minutes. So I dug through there, started reading, and then I called all three of these guys up here to get advice on what to do. Because I had no idea. I mean, here I am without a hotel. I have 100 prepaid registrants. No chance of getting a hotel in the next 5 months. So I called, the last call I made, after I talked to them, they just said, you know, John's biggest thing was, get a hotel, don't worry about the dates. Because my question was, dates important or hotel? And he said, get a hotel. Even if you got to change the dates, don't worry about it. So went out, and Lynn and I were able to secure an appointment with Helen here at the West End. They welcomed us back with open arms and said, we missed having you guys. What a welcome sound to hear from alcoholics. Kicked out of one hotel, which we're used to. Welcome to our hotel. We missed you. Never hear that. You don't hear that much. So that started. That's why we're back at the West End. And right now we have a contract, just so you guys know about the future, where we stand is... Lynn, who's here in the audience, will be our chairperson next year, and we've secured the hotel through 2018 with deposits and contracts. So this will be our venue through at least that date, including next year when the International's here. We just figure that'll be a bigger chance for outreach. But that's where we stand today. And the funny story I have is goes all the way back to Alateen. This is historical data, and Mike is nice enough to be recording this, so we've got this as true data, and my brothers could vouch for us. So why did I have Security Chase and me and my brothers? We used to love to get into the elevators, just like these elevators. You think you got to wait a long time for these elevators? The Radisson had two, and we had one of them hijacked. Actually, they had two sets, one on the far end and two in the main lobby. The one in the far back near where you could cut through to the meeting space... We found out that if you pull the doors open midway through the floor, it stops the elevator, and you can just hang out in there and do, you know, it's just cool. When you're a boy and you know you've got that kind of control, you do it every chance you get. So we did it one time, and then all we saw was the security guy's feet midway through the floor here. It's amazing we didn't get killed. We opened them up good enough so we could jump out the bottom, so we didn't get caught by the guy in the top. And that's what kind of stuff was going on while my mom was getting sober in AA. So when you hear in meetings, you hear a lot of times, or I hear a lot of times, that if you have a child under 13 and he gets rowdy, please have him leave the building. My thing is this, all right? Luckily, I was allowed to be here because I knew where to come. I walked through those doors at 23 years old knowing that this place was going to save my life, because I had heard it, I had sat in the meetings, I had been rambunctious, but I heard the message, it got into my ears, and I knew coming through that door. So when you lay down the rules, be careful that they're not, make sure that it's the same rules that got you into your seat as you sit here today. I think that's a very important message to hear, because if they were to change the rules from when I was 10 to when I was 23, I might not be standing here today. So that's my story. It's amazing that they didn't get kicked out of the Radisson just because of the Alateens. The hot dog cookouts, there were probably 20 Alateens that would go out to the pool. We would play sharks and minnows and eat hot dogs and have cookouts. And that was our experience. We looked at it as a vacation. We only lived 10 minutes away, but we went there and stayed in the hotel every year. So that was why I loved the Roundup from the beginning.
You should have seen their room.
Five of us.
Hey, you should see their room today.
I would like to say my daughters are here, and they are not tearing up this hotel room. They are way too well behaved. They got a good mother.
So in listening to Bill and Rich, I mean Richard, in listening to Bill and Eric, in the way that they came on the committee, in the way that they got to be chairperson, it shows me that things have changed drastically over the time that I was on the committee, because you didn't get asked to be on the committee when I was. You were told you were on the committee. George Montgomery was one of the two people who 12-stepped me, and after I was sober about 3 or 4 years, he and my sponsor, Glenn Strickland at the time, told me that I was coming on the Atlanta Roundup Committee, and they told me what my job would be. So I felt like I was always groomed for the job. When I became chairperson, I was always told, as soon as I came on the committee, I was told when I was going to be chairperson, there were no elections. I mean, there were on the committee, but basically it was a foregone conclusion. But I remember that right before I became chairperson, I had stood for delegate, and I had lost. And it was a devastating loss to me, and I was basically finished with AA at the time. The Sunday of the election, that Monday was Eric's mother, Lindsay's, birthday. And I was supposed to be on the program for her birthday. And I called Lindsay when I got back from the assembly and told Lindsay that I was still going to come to her birthday, but I didn't want to participate in the program. Now, you got to understand, Lindsay, it's not just Eric. I keep saying Richard. Richard's his father. Eric and I that go back. Lindsay was at my very first AA meeting. So I called Lindsay and I told her I was coming to her birthday, but I didn't want to be on the program because I didn't want to stand up in front of those SOBs and say anything. That's how I felt about AA at that time. And then I was also very involved in self-support. When the basket went around, I didn't put any money in the basket. And so Lindsay and my wife, Jenny, who's sitting over there, both said, we're in trouble now. And I also handed in my resignation to the Atlanta Roundup Committee. So not only wasn't going to serve as chairperson, but I wasn't going to be on the committee. Well, I guess, you know, they don't accept resignations either back then, because Glenn and I had written the resignation and sent it to him. You know, I'm a businessman, so it was very
edited,
formal.
Edited, make sure it's all spell checked.
Oh, yeah. I don't have that problem. So I sent it to them, and they asked me to come out to lunch and brought me their letters back, said it's not accepted. Now, Glenn's my sponsor, and, you know, so I had to listen to him. So in essence, the next 2 years on the Atlanta Roundup Committee as chairperson, while you people had to put up with my shenanigans, and I was not a good chairperson, it saved my life, you know, because for the next 2 years it got me back into AA, and then I ended up becoming treasurer for the state and got back into service work. So that's my story around the roundup, and I'm sticking to it.
John, you got any interesting stories?
I think I've given as interesting a story as you can give, and I'm going to pass that on to Bill.
There is one thing I'd like to say, and I'm looking around the room and the people that have been involved in the roundup and other things too. The roundup and anything that's really worthwhile takes a lot of time and a lot of concentration. And I remember when John introduced me to Elsa. You know, Chuck C. was probably one of the most revered people ever alive, you know, especially in AA. And John said if it weren't for Elsa, Chuck wouldn't be Chuck. And I think that that's true throughout all the service. You know, if Pat weren't as forgiving and loving, and if Katie wasn't so forgiving and loving, and all Mary Emma and everybody else
Jenny.
That's in Jenny, Jenny, how'd you like that?
Okay.
you know, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. You know, and so I'm so thankful for that. And the support, because it's a lonely walk. There are some lonely walks you have to take. One of the biggest supporting things that Pat has ever done, Eric talked about getting rid of karaoke. Well, the first year that I was chairman, Avery, from central office, worked at central office, was the entertainment chair. And she came in with this idea, I'd like to do karaoke on Friday night. And you'd have thought somebody did something on the floor. You know, nobody said anything. And I thought, well, if she's working this hard, I need to back her, you know. So I said, Avery, if you'll do karaoke, I'll sing.
Johnny Cash.
And everybody says, well, okay, we'll do karaoke. So I thought, you know, that was 6 months before the roundup. And I thought they'd have forgotten. They didn't. So here, my wife is sitting in the audience, and I'm up there singing Ring of Fire, you know. So the next year, I did it again. And then the next year, we sang Jackson together. And that's the year that Brianna and Autumn sang. This is a family deal we got going here. You know, we talk about we're losing the culture. I've been hearing that, like when I worked at Home Depot, they say we're losing the Home Depot culture. The culture of this is family. And it shows all over the place, you know. And my life is so much better for being a part of it. I can't wait for it to happen again, you know. So I'm very proud to have been a part and to know these guys, you know. I feel like the baby. I am the baby.
Mm, actually.
Not the youngest, but I'm, well.
Actually, I'm the baby.
But yeah, but you started. You don't count. Anyway, I just love that family story because it is family. We are family. And I feel the same way about another one called the Hilton Head Midwater Conference. You know, of course, I lived there for 10 years, so that's how I feel about that. So anyway, thank you. I love you all.
Do you guys have questions? What's your question? Or stories or idea or memories? Mike, I'll get to you. Go ahead, Carol. Done.
Very beginning.
From day one?
From the first round.
Nikki?
That is exactly the way Daphne Central was. That is exactly the way he was. Everybody had to get together. And he started it, and that's where it came from, Dr. Hunter.
And just to kind of feed on that, you guys may wonder, so what's the pattern here? Well, Thursday night is free, but it's also female, male, and it's continued like that since the beginning, and it's local. It's always someone within the metropolitan area, and that's one of the cool things about it, because we always go get the circus speed, the speakers from all over the country, but then the committee sits and racks their brain, well, who locally can we get? And that's when it gets really fun back there, because you're really starting to throw around names. Mike, you had a comment?
Yeah, it's good to see all of you guys. I had the privilege of being the hotel chair 5 or 6 years ago, and this falls under the category of God looks after us. Your example of scrambling with 5 months is unbelievable. But I want to talk about a specific incident, but just to give you a little perspective. I love the roundup. I got sober in 86, and my sponsor at the time was Dick Anderson, and he was a big roundup booster. But I left town, went on the road, came back in 98, and I think my first roundup was here in 2002, 2003, did some volunteer work, et cetera, et cetera. I want to say on a personal basis, and you can relate to this, Eric. I learned a lot of valuable lessons as being a member of this committee. My first two roundups were here, then to Decatur for the Holiday Inn, and then the hotel was sold, so I dealt with three sets of players in 4 years under three different committee chairs. My first roundup, and my background is, my professional background is hospitality management, so I did the research and so on and so forth, and Thursday, I suit up and show up and meet with the hotel rep, and the two most critical things, assuming we have a hotel, is the temperature in the ballroom, which is great today, and the sound, which is great today. So I get the, whoever the hotel rep was, I don't think I've ever shared this story. Let's go check the ballroom. Sitting on's okay. It feels good. Temperature's about right. What about the sound? Well, you didn't make any arrangements. Somebody had dropped the ball. You didn't make any arrangements, so you've got those Muzak speakers up there. And I said, that ain't gonna fly. How about your AV department? And she looked at her watch and she said, well, it's 4:05, and they left 5 minutes ago. I said, please give them a call. And Elmer, whatever his name was, answered the phone. And she says, Elmer, we got a problem here. Can you get some column or platform speakers up here, et cetera? So this guy comes up and he sets it up. And I'm thinking, keen alcoholic mind, can we keep Elmer around tonight? I said, sure, that'll be $75 an hour with a 4-hour minimum. And I'm thinking, that ain't going to fly. We'll just have to wing it. And I can't remember the names of the two tapers.
Lee?
No, this was before them, and they didn't really know. Anyway, it starts out, the sound is okay. And I'm looking in the background by the door, and I said, it's Elmer. And he's not in the captions. He's in his street clothes. And he is overseeing it, okay, on his own nickel. I found out later, he's a member of the club.
Right.
That's a true story. Right. I arranged for Lee to be here next year. I said, I'm not going through that again. But
and it works out. Every year it works out.
True story.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to say, the year Lindsay came, I was the voice on the voice of the year that we were at the castle. And here I'm about ready to freak out. And Lindsay came to my room and was crying hysterical about you coming into the program. And I'm thinking, I can't handle it. I'm ready to kill myself. So it's a small world. And another little quick story is I used to drink at that Radisson. My mom, my younger sister, was at Peachburg. And my mom said, well, you may want to go to this roundup. I'm drinking at the bar. So I went to one roundup, then I've been sober. That's from 1980, so in 79, I think I was at my first roundup.
We got, this reminds me of something, when we were at the Radisson, we were sitting around Saturday afternoon, and somebody called the answering service. I used to be involved in the answering service. Somebody called the answering service and said they wanted some help, and they were at the Radisson. That's the biggest 12-step call I ever made. That guy's sitting there drunk on the floor, and there's about 30 people in there talking to him.
Hey, I'm Robert.
Hey, Robert.
Thank you so much for being up there. I respect and admire all of y'all. I've known your mom since I got sober. It was great to hear George and Marshall Montgomery. Because when I got first came in 1988, that was my very first roundup, and I didn't like Marge at all. I love George. 13-year-old daughter. And I remember those days back there when Granny was going about outdoor pool or a place like that, up with the cookouts and the kids, and for a lot of us.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of, I think, just true sit down for 3 or 4 hours and talk. And maybe it could never happen here. I don't know. There's lots of places outside. What a great idea to have a little cookout for hot dogs and hamburgers. You know how people bond around such like that. Sometimes a little bit of difficult in a big place like this. I love those times. Every roundup that I've been to was just absolutely amazing. And I've had so many conversations with outcomes throughout the years. And it is, I do see it coming from full circle. And I just, Eric and something about his daughter doing a talent show Friday night. I didn't know. This is probably my fault, but I didn't know that anybody could do participate in a talent show, you know. And I'm like, what another fantastic way to get families involved and things like that. So, I don't know, just thoughts. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for pointing that out. The reason I put together this and I wanted the panel to be thrown together, and this is, and I'm glad that you guys showed up, because if not, we'd just be talking to ourselves. But the reason everybody in here is for a reason, and I'm not on the committee anymore. I mean, as soon as you know that we close out on Sunday, I'm done. But it's such an important part of my life. But you're responsible for that, and everybody in here is responsible for that. And what I mean by that is, like last night with the talent show, maybe we had 75 people in here, but we had 400 or 500 in the speaker. So you hear the speaker and you think that that's going to keep you sober. Maybe. I think that the fellowship has been a huge part of my life. My daughter singing, she will remember that just like I remember the cookouts at the pool. If she is one of us, maybe she'll walk through that door one day and have the life that I have today. So we're responsible for that. I mean, that's the whole reason to give you the history was it didn't just happen. You guys pay your registration and you think we really hear your complaints and give them valid. We really don't, but we hear you. But there's a lot of work that goes behind this. And that's what I didn't know before now. And so when you have a suggestion or you have something and it you don't feel like it's seeing the light of day, find yourself active in here and then find out what's involved in starting a cookout. Well, maybe it's just going and asking somebody, or maybe there's a process that might take 2 years, but 2 years from now you could say, hey, that was my idea, and wow, look at what happened. So great point, and that's what the whole purpose of this was for.
Cease Corrigan.
I'm so sorry. I was reading this and I didn't hear the question, but what was the
first? She wanted to know who the first speakers were. I know Cease Corrigan. There's actually out there, there's a listing of the speakers for the first 5 roundups. I know Cease Corrigan was one of them from the West Coast. I'm not sure who the...
I mean, Chuck C. was one of the first 5 years. But yeah, the list is out there at the archives, which was very nice that Gary put that together from archives. We tried to find some CDs, some tapes, but we weren't able to. But that's the history of the first few roundups. And there's a great picture of our own John over there at the first roundup. John? Hey, John.
Hey, John.
This has been a really right. I got sober in California and moved back to Atlanta in 85 and hooked up with Dory. He said, you're going to the roundup. And so I went to the roundup. I didn't know where it was. And I met Kathy on the steps of the Radisson. And 29 years later, we've been married for 27 years and just 28. My kids came here with us. They were upset when 1 year we said, no, we just can't have you come this year. And they were devastated.
know, I had the great fortune to be a voice on Roundup. And, you know, my kids were sitting in the front row. And they've never seen me drink, right? But, you know, they know where to go. But I did want to share this. I kind of shirked a little bit my duty. I was asked to help start the golf tournament. And so I got my sponsee, David M. And I said, David, you need to help me with this. And the first year, I helped him. And then after that, he took over and ran with it. And he's been a great, great golf chair. The last 2 years, it's sold out. And so that's part of this deal, you know, as people get involved, as people, sponsorship relationships, like Harold was saying, you know, service work is an incredibly important part of sobriety. It has been for me, saved my life on a number of occasions. And if you don't have these kinds of things, then you're missing that element. And the last thing I'd like to say is that conferences and retreats and that sort of thing is a different level of recovery. You know, for those people that just go to meetings and they never go to these things, they miss out. They miss so much. And I'm grateful that I had someone say, you're going around.
You mentioned Roop, and it's interesting. You know, Roop went off when he left the Atlanta Roundup Committee. He went off and helped start the Marietta Roundup, but there's also a story behind that. Bill wanted to bring Pat Wheeler onto the Atlanta Roundup Committee, and the rest of the committee did not want to bring Pat on, so they brought me on instead. And Bill left the committee and got Pat, and they started the Marietta Roundup. So I consider myself the founder of the Atlanta Roundup, I mean the Marietta Roundup.
That's funny. We have five more minutes. A couple. Pat.
Pat.
You know, I went to high school with your parents. So I don't know if that gives me anything to think, because I'm not sure.
You know the stories as they really sit. Being in Al-Anon, you remember them.
It's guilt by association.
Years after that, they introduced Bill and me. One of the first things that I remember, that first weekend that we ever actually started, we were like starting to date, and he had plans on that weekend to go to the Roundup. Well, I didn't know what the Roundup was. I mean, you know, had not stayed active in Al-Anon myself during my single years, because I figured that once the alcoholic was out of my life, I didn't need, you know, anything else. So that's how we kind of got back together with working our programs together. But he called me from the Roundup that first year. That was in 1992, in July, and he said that Lindsay was the boy, was the chair. She was the chair, right?
Yes.
And that he had just witnessed the most amazing miracle, that her son was here, David was already here, and that Jay came in. And he was visibly moved and emotionally a wreck just talking about it. And I had, he said, I'll try to get you a ticket, and you can come down here, but that didn't work out, so he was just telling me what was going on his phone. And it really made an impression on me as to what kind of things were, you know, going on. And he said, well, we'll go together next year. And that, you know, that's good. Because we just actually had maybe one date. Long story short, 2 years later, we were married by the time the Roundup came around. And we came to the Roundup. Few years after that, when Bill was the chair, and his dream to get Al-Anon more involved, and his dream to have your dad tell his story, I got closer to that, and it was the most important. And that was the highlight of
That's a, I mean, it's amazing how it all comes like that. What I want to do right now is, because Mike's going
to, get one more question.
Let me just wrap this so we can get it all on tape, and then we can go to another question, because Mike needs to shut down the, we're 1 minute, right? Okay, what I wanted to say was just basically document the date because of this is all for historical, and then I'll get to a couple more questions so we can wrap up. But it's August 2nd of 2014, and this is seen through the eyes of us only, and I'm sure there's more. We'd like to do this again next year with a different panel and then another panel, and just to try to get different versions of what has happened. So historically, as we go forward, that's what we end up with. So, Mike, we're good with the recording, and then I'll take a couple more questions. Thank you.